Morning and to Milan, honorable members. And we have in our midst the representatives of the Parliamentary Budget Office, I see. We have the support staff of the committee. I was expecting somebody from the Secretary of Parliament's office. I'm sure they'll join us, and there are one or two members that went to E249 as opposed to this venue. They're on their way. And I'm suggesting that we, with your permission, start. Is that okay? Thank you so much. And then, so once again, ladies, gentlemen, honorable members, welcome to our meeting, long overdue meeting. We have before us, we attempted to get to members a information pack. I'm hoping that all members have received an information pack that would have minutes and the relevant documentation. And I do think there is a register doing the rounds, if it hasn't done already, for your information so that we smooth out the future communication. So if members can just make sure that you have filled in that register with all your relevant contact details. Before us, honorable members, is an agenda. And I would want to put the agenda to members for consideration and adoption.
I propose that we adopt the agenda.
Mr. Singh?
I second.
And then Mr. Honorable Steenhuisen.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy with the agenda it is, but I just would like an opportunity at the end if we can have just a discussion about documentation that we will require for the following meeting.
Members, as you know, I'm not running the ship alone. My co-chair is here, so at some point during proceedings, Honorable Mohai would take over proceedings. If we then can go to the minutes of the 5th of May 2016 and get a sense from members if those minutes are a true reflection of what transpired on that day, or if there are proposals for amendments, additions to the minutes of the 5th of May. And I want to put page number one on the minutes. Page number one. Happiness. Thank you very much. Page number two. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, one to the third paragraph. Nomination was seconded by Mr. C.J. De Beer. I never had the initial T since I was born. Thank you.
Yakoli Sabah. Yours is also J. Any other amendments on page number two? Can I refer members then to page number two, the very sentence the committee secretary indicated? That sentence, when I read it, didn't make sense. Can I propose a change to it? That we take out the words, and the following was the outcome. So the last one, two, three, four, the last five words, remove, and we add the word, and after elected. So the sentence will read, the committee secretary indicated that the co-chairpersons of the committee would be elected and further outline the process to be followed. Almal gelukkig? Honorable Minte?
Thanks, Chair. Sorry to take you back.
Before we go back, let's just deal with that one. I'll give you an opportunity. Okay. Are we happy with the reformulation of the sentence? Thanks. Honorable Minte?
Thanks, Chair. On the roll call, I was not absent. We didn't know about the meeting. Not one, so it must be corrected.
All right. So how do you propose we record that? Not informed. I don't want to get into fights about it. We'll put an apology, accepted apology. Is that a fine? All right, thanks. We'll note it as an apology as opposed to absent. And move on. Thank you very much. I beg your pardon. After the adoption of the agenda, I should have put apologies. Are there any apologies for this meeting?
Yes, Co-Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members and guests, support staff. We received two apologies. The first one is from Ms. Coleman, who is on oversight, and the second one is from Ms. September. They are both from the NA. She's also on oversight. Thank you.
Any other apologies? No? Two apologies, Ms. Coleman and Ms. September, both doing oversight work. Thank you very much. Moving on with our agenda, ladies and gentlemen, we want to hand over to our content advisors. I beg your pardon? Oh, you want us to formally adopt the minutes? I thought we had formally adopted the minutes. Can we have a mover to adopt the minutes as amended? Mr. Walters moves, and Mr. Masondo, Honorable Masondo, seconds. Thank you very much. And has been adopted by the committee. Can we hand over to the content advisors to I'm informed we're waiting for sound and vision, but we do have hard copies. So apologies for that. Sound and vision is still being sorted out, but we do have hard copies. We're going to allow for the content advisor to and or his team, her team, to take us through the presentation. Hopefully we'll deliberate on it afterwards. Have a common understanding, ladies and gentlemen, because that will then inform, I think, how we proceed as this committee. Mr. Walter, sir.
Chair, may I ask where the Secretary of Parliament is? Should he not be here for this meeting? Thank you.
I indicated earlier on that we have or were expecting representation from the Secretary of Parliament. Not necessarily the warm body, but the Secretary of Parliament. We didn't, from our side, and if members felt that we needed the secretary here, then let me, from the offset, apologize, because we thought that the Secretary of Parliament would not be required for this particular meeting. But if members felt that it was the case, let me apologize, because it would have been an oversight from the table. Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Chair. I think it would have been absolutely necessary that the secretary or a representative be here. I've been reading a press statement, which I was placed on my desk this morning, where there's been a difference in the understanding between the Chief Whip of the Opposition and the Secretary on a particular issue that relates to our work. And it would have been good to get the other side before we came up with a decision as a committee as how we should proceed. So it's unfortunate that the Secretary or any of his representatives are not here, and maybe one could call them and check if our secretary could do that.
Problem solved. The Secretary of Parliament's representative, Mr. Pindela, is here. So we'd expect that you would note what is being said, respond as best as possible, and if we're not comfortable, we can always do the necessary follow-up. But let me once again, for the record, indicate that we didn't, from our side, invite him. And in future, as we go through our business, if we feel he must be in all our meetings, I don't see a problem with that. But for this meeting, please accept my apology. But Mr. Pindela is here from the secretary, from the office of the Secretary of Parliament. Yes, Mr. Walters.
Obviously, we accept your apology, but I strongly feel that the secretary should be at these meetings to be held accountable and to answer any questions directly that may be asked to him. So I think in future we should invite the secretary to every single meeting that we have. Thank you.
Any objections to that? Mr. Honorable Masana?
No. As long as the understanding is not a very fixed, rigid one, that indeed as it were available or as and when invited, he should make himself available.
I'll note Honorable Steenhuisen and then I'll note Honorable Singh.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that the first intervention was the correct one. There's no other body in Parliament that holds the Secretary to Parliament accountable and the Executive accountable. This is the only committee that he actually needs to attend. And I think that, as a matter of course, he should be at these meetings because there may be issues during our deliberations that he would be required to give input on and answers to. Having served on the POA, it was always meetings that were missed. They were always told that information was going to be given to us at a later stage. Invariably, it ended up slipping through the cracks. So I think it would be better that this is the only body that can hold the Secretary to Parliament accountable, and I think that he should be at these meetings going forward.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with that. This is like any other portfolio committee or standing committee, where if you have a portfolio committee of public works or whatever, the Director General or his or her representative is present at those meetings on behalf of the department. So the same thing should prevail when we have our meetings. Thank you.
No. Take Honorable Zavaza first, Honorable Masondo, because you have, and then I'll take you, sir.
Chairperson, I would like to agree with what Honorable Masondo was saying, that We shouldn't be strict and fast on that particular issue, and that we should invite the Secretary of Parliament should we see the need to do so, where there are issues that he should respond to. So I would rather support that idea, that we leave it open and accept that whenever there are issues that we think he must answer, he must then be called.
Honorable,
I don't think it's correct to say that we will not meet unless the secretary is here, is available to the meeting. I think that the kind of thinking, there's something wrong with that kind of thinking.
Ms. Mente, do you want to comment? Let me take Singh, Mente, Walters, Steenhuisen. You'll be the last one, sir, and then we're going to take a decision.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think we are splitting hairs over this. The Act is very clear. The Act says that the oversight mechanism, that's Chapter 2, 4, 3, the oversight mechanism may require the accounting officer and any other official of Parliament to appear before it. May. It's not shall. But we are saying that for this committee, it's a new committee, we're moving forward, and nobody suggested, Honorable Masondo, that we can't continue with this meeting because the secretary is not here. We know that a representative of his office is here, so we continue. But I think we have the right, members have the right to request the secretary in person to be here to answer questions that we think the secretary may be able to provide answers for in future meetings. So I think we're splitting hairs over, you know, whether the secretary should be here or not.
Thanks, Chair. Partly covered by my colleague. I think we should treat the Secretariat presence in this meeting, like we do with the other portfolio committees where ministers must come, and if they cannot, then they send us apologies. So I do not see a need why should we be fussy, he be fussy about coming here or then tender an apology when he cannot. But as things stands, he should be here all the time, because questions will arise in terms of this committee and in terms of expenditure and everything that we're interested in. And we need someone to account for those questions as when and where we ask them. But if he is not going to come, it's going to be problematic that we must invite him to come for questions, and then we cannot have questions on the day that he's not here. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm covered as well. I mean, the Secretary of Parliament, in terms of the act as the accounting officer, it just doesn't make sense to have a meeting that is a committee on the financial management of Parliament without the accounting officer being here. He's where the buck stops in Parliament. And, you know, I know I've been in meetings like this before. The blame shifting gets done. You get officials that are sent here, and they say, well, they're not authorized to answer. I think when we have these meetings, I don't imagine we're going to be meeting on a weekly basis like the portfolio committee. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect the accounting officer, as designated by the Act, to be at these meetings.
Thank you, Chairperson. We can cut this time very short. Section 4.3 gives the reply. Page 16. Reading. The oversight mechanism may require the accounting officer and any other official of Parliament to be before it. That's the Act. Let's stick to what is here. Thank you.
All right. I think the sentiment of the meeting is that ideally Mr. Gidlana or his representative must be here so that we have a smooth flowing meeting. And if he is not available, he will obviously, like everybody else, put through an apology and send a representative. But I think the sentiment is somebody from that office must be with us. And if we look at the program, if we're going to adopt it, the first two meetings anyway, we're going to require the Secretary of Parliament. Anyway, the first two meetings, if we adopt the agenda as it is. So I really think that we're not too far away. Let us make it pan out in practice and take it from there. But the sentiment is noted. Having said that, can we then move to the next agenda item, which is the presentation? We may. Thank you very much. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson and Co-Chairperson. Honourable members, may I also greet the Acting Deputy Secretary and also the team that is with me. I am the Acting Unit Manager for Finance and Economics Cluster, and I'm also having the coordinating advisors to support me in this presentation. I believe the legal services may join us soon. Oh, Advocate Jenkins is here. He's also part of the team to support us. With your permission, I continue. The outline of the presentation is as follows. It will be the introduction, mandate of the committee, powers and functions of the committee, the establishment and proceedings of the committee, guiding principles of the committee, the oversight mechanisms that the committee may apply, and the conclusion. Co-chairs, in the introduction, may I just mention the fact that Section 4 of the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislature Act provides for the establishment of the oversight mechanism of Parliament. In terms of this provision, a Joint Standing Committee of Financial Management of Parliament was established in terms of Part A of Joint Rules of Parliament. The first meeting took place on the 16th of May 2016, when co-chairs were elected, Mr. S.J. Mohai and Mr. V.G. Smith. The mandate of the committee is derived from the Constitution. It's also derived from the Act, and it's also derived from the Joint Rules of Parliament, and also is derived from any resolution passed by Parliament, taken by both houses. I will elaborate on each point as we continue. The committee has the powers that committees have under Section 56 and 69 of the Constitution. The committee may require the executive authority, accounting officer, and any official of Parliament to appear before it. The committee maintains oversight of the financial management of Parliament by, among others, considering the executive authority directives with financial implications in terms of Section 37, subsection 5 of the Act, by considering the annual report submitted to Parliament in terms of Section 60 of the Act, by considering any executive authority instruction that might not be consistent with the Act or its regulations in terms of Section 66 of the Act, performing any other function specified in the Act or by the rules of Parliament or consistent with the Act, considering the draft strategic plans in terms of Section 17, subsection 2 of the Act, and also considering monthly, quarterly, and mid-year reports. And also, Parliament may, by resolution of the two houses, assign any other function or task or duty to the committee. The powers of the committee under the Constitution mandate it to summon for evidence, to require any person or institution to report to it, or also to enforce summons or requests in terms of the powers, privileges, immunities of Parliament and privileges and Provincial Legislature Act. The committee is also having the power to receive petitions, representations, or submission. In terms of these powers, the committee may thus require the executive authority, accounting officer, and any official of Parliament to appear before it. The second sentence is just a repetition. Now, the powers of the committee continue. Is also considering executive authority directives with financial implications in terms of Section 37, subsection Section 5 of the Act, read with Section 20. Now, such a directive must be in writing, addressed to the accounting officer. The likelihood of unauthorized expenditure, in that event, accounting officer must inform the executive authority in writing, which means if the accounting officer receives a directive and that directive might lead into unauthorized expenditure, the accounting officer must advise the executive authority accordingly. Further instructions and reasons in writing prior to proceeding with the directive that carries the risk must be now referred to the committee, which means if the executive authority decide to continue with the instruction, now such an instruction must now be referred to the committee with the reasons given, among others, that there is an expenditure of exceptional nature not provided for in the budget and cannot be postponed to future appropriation or approval of funds without serious prejudice to interests of Parliament, or the expenditure is unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure approved by Parliament. The Act further says responsibility for unauthorized expenditure if the accounting officer continues without due regard, then the accounting officer will be personally responsible. If, however, unauthorized expenditure is not approved as directed by the executive authority, the executive authority will be personally responsible. When we talk of the executive authority, we talk of the speaker and the chairperson acting jointly. The committee may recommend authorization of such expenditure to the House or to Parliament in both houses. The powers and functions of the committee are also including considering the annual report submitted to Parliament in terms of Section 60 of the Act, including audited financial statement, audit report from the Auditor General, the annual performance report. The committee also plays a role of scoper. I believe honorable members are aware of what the scoper does. The AG may be requested to brief the committee in terms of Section 5.1B of the Public Audit Act. The committee is also expected to consider audit findings. The committee should also consider report from Parliament's Audit Committee. Now, Section 48.1C refers to effectiveness of internal controls, quality of financial management, quality of financial statements, performance reporting, and compliance with laws and regulations. Those are the things that the audit committee would highlight. Powers and functions of the committee continue, considering any executive authority instruction, as we have already spoken about earlier on. I may not repeat that. I continue to the next slide. Performing any other function specified in the Act or by the rules of Parliament or consistent with the object of the Act. Parliament or the committee may also consider the strategic plans in terms of Section 17.2 of the Act. One must just mention to members here that the strategic plans for the next 5 years have already been adopted, which means at this stage the committee will have to familiarize itself with that. Chapter 3 provides for the manner, form, and content of the strategic plan, annual performance plan, and the budget, which means when the committee considers the strategic plans and also the annual performance plan, it needs to consider whether they are consistent with the provisions of the Act. Section 17 provides specifically for the process of consultation between the executive authority and the Minister of Finance. Here we talk about the separation of powers. Why we are bringing this sentence here is just to say to members, in processing the strategic plans, annual performance plan, the committee should take into consideration the fact that there are other processes that are supposed to take place between the executive authority and the Minister of Finance, so that whatever processes are taking place are complementing those processes. The committee must consider the drafts. I think the point has been also elaborated. I may continue to the next slide. The other things that the committee would do is the monthly, quarterly, and mid-year reports. The importance of looking at monthly, quarterly, mid-year reports is to help the committee not to come after the fact, so that whatever is happening during the year, the committee can raise any concerns or make recommendations so that come the end of the financial year, some of the things that needed attention are attended to. I may just make an example to say, in other committees, the mid-year monitoring helps the committees to say, if the department is not spending accordingly, then the committee can also make the department to account or to ensure that the department is spending appropriately so that come the end of the year, there is no underspending. Now, the purpose here would be for the committee to hold the executive authority to spend accordingly, because whatever funds are appropriated, the purpose is for service delivery. The purpose is to enable the institution to carry on with its mandate. Now, if there is any underspending, that means in a way service delivery or the fulfillment of the mandate is being compromised. That is the purpose of this mid-year monitoring. The committee also has the power to approve departures from regulation or condone failure to comply with regulation as provided for in section 65.4. The establishment and proceedings of the committee, I believe honorable members are aware of this, but for everybody present, the committee composed of 14 members, 9 from the National Assembly, and then the numbers are also broken down into political parties, and 5 from NCOP. In NCOP, members are representing from provinces. The chairing of the committee is co-chaired by members from each house. The quorum of the committee, the majority of the members from each house constitute a quorum. Now, if we look at the 14 members, the quorum would be 8. Now, the majority from each house would be 5 from National Assembly and 3 from the NCOP. Committee may, however, proceed with its business if at least one-third of the members are present, but may decide on a question when the meeting convenes. One-third, my calculation says at least 5 members. The committee can continue with the business, but no question or decision will be taken under those circumstances. Decisions before the committee is decided when there is agreement on the question among the majority of the members. The guiding principles: no member may attend a deliberation on a matter in which the member has a material interest. The promoting and maintaining of high standard of professional ethics in the financial management of Parliament. Promoting the efficient, economic, and effective use of resources allocated to Parliament, and also ensuring the transparent, accountable, and sound management of the revenue, expenditure, assets, and liabilities of Parliament, so that the public out there can have confidence in the institution. The oversight mechanisms that the committee may apply, I believe, when members look at the way forward, they will have to decide as to how they will do their work in considering the strategic plans, annual performance plans, and budget vote of Parliament, and also dealing with the mid-year reporting, and also performing functions that are specified in the Act, and also how the committee can undertake oversight visits and study tours so that it can carry its mandate effectively. Co-chairs, I thank you. I have my colleagues here and also colleagues from the legal services. The questions will be dealt by all of us, not myself. Thank you.
Okay. Let's note hands for, we're opening it up for discussion. clarity, discussion, and so on, and we will then take decisions later. Ms. Mente, you'll be number one. Honorable Steenhuisen, two. Ms. Singh, number three.
Thanks, Chair. There is a slide, I just can't get to the page, where you say the committee can summon any official. I just need clarity if in any official of Vote One or any official of all committees just across, all departments across Parliament. And then number two, I think this will go to legal experts. Slide seven. If unauthorized expenditure not approved, executive authority is responsible in personal capacity. So as this committee or as Parliament, what powers do we have to get the money from that person, for that person to account or at a personal level? So can we get the money from pension, or can we get money from their salaries immediately? How do we recover any unauthorized expenditure which was not authorized before it was spent? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to address myself to slide five, I think it was, deals with the powers and functions of the committee. And it says, considering the draft strategic plans in terms of section 17.2 of the FMPPLA, and then monthly, quarterly, and mid-year reports in terms of section 54. It's my understanding that we will be provided with the monthly financial statements of Parliament as per section 54 of the Act, so that we're able to conduct that oversight. And the second thing is, Chair, there were a number of powers that had been ascribed to what was called then the Parliamentary Oversight Authority. And there were a number of issues pending in that committee for which we were still awaiting reports from the Secretary to Parliament, various other officials. With the advent of the new legislation and the implementation now in the House, a number of those issues have now reached a dead end. And there's no other forum to raise those. And so I would wonder if we could ask you to liaise with the Speaker of Parliament to understand what's going to happen with those issues. There are a number of reports that were still required. There's a number of feedbacks around the organogram of Parliament that the Secretary to Parliament was going to come back to us on. There's a whole host of issues that have now essentially hit a dead end. But we can't let them just simply lie there. We need to be able to extend them and carry them into another forum. And I'm not sure how that's going to take place, and I would leave it to your expertise to grapple with that one.
Thank you, Co-Chairperson. I have a number of questions, but I just want to pick up on what Honourable Steenhuisen said first. We've had another organ called the QCF, the Quarterly Consultative Forum, which has been chaired by Chairperson of Committees, Honourable Didiza, which dealt with issues that affect members of Parliament and broadly within the budget. Things there that we spoke about fall within the budget of Parliament. So where will the QCF, I mean, how do we deal with those issues of QCF in addition to POA? And then just to pick up again an Honourable Mentor on slide 7, where it is stated here that the executive authority will be responsible in personal capacities if there's unauthorized expenditure. Where does the accounting officer fit into this picture? I normally know that an accounting officer, if there is any expenditure that is requested by the EA, then he submits a letter to the EA saying, well, I'm doing this because you are directing me to do so. But why is the accounting officer left out of this particular statement where only the EAs are being held responsible for unauthorized expenditure? Then just to go to my questions, I think we approved minutes just now which said that we elected co-chairpersons on the 5th of May. I don't know if that's a correct date, but I think we did meet on the 5th of May, according to the minutes. But the presentation here says 16th of May. That's on page on page 3. It says the first meeting took place on the 16th of May. So just for the records, too. See whether it was the 5th or the 16th. Then my next question relates to powers and functions, slide 8. Let me go in chronological order. Slide 6. The committee may thus require the EA accounting officer and any official of parliament to appear before it. I think that's normal practice that in committees that ministers are also requested to be present, ministers or deputy ministers. And then you go on to say the Act permits specifically that the JS, our committee may require the accounting officer or official of parliament to appear. So I think we must just note the principle that the EAs can also be invited to appear before this committee if the committee so requests. And that's a principle. The two. Then, on slide 8, I note here powers and functions. It says, after the third bullet, plays role of SCOPA. I don't think that was meant to be written like that. We can't play the role of SCOPA. We can actually question and interact with the Auditor General on the report that he produces. But we can't play the role of SCOPA, because if our SCOPA colleagues, and you are the main culprit, well, person here, chairperson, if you see that, and if this is something that we are allowed to do, then it's going beyond our mandate to play the role of SCOPA. SCOPA is a particular committee. Then, on the strat plan, the presenter did say that, well, the strat plan has been adopted, I don't know which slide it is, but somewhere, for 5 years, slide 11. It's been adopted for 5 years, so that's the end of the story. I really believe that, as a committee that has just been established, that we should reserve our right to relook at that strat plan and make comments on that strat plan moving forward, because we are now a committee established in terms of this act, and I don't see any problem that the strat plan be brought before us. So if there are any glaring omissions or commissions or whatever it is, we must be allowed to make an input into that strat plan, because it's for 5 years. It's moving forward. And then slide 12. All right, we've got that. That's fine. Slide 13. Second last bullet point. Approval of departure or condemnation of non-compliance must be recorded in writing and referred to this committee promptly. Now, at what point is this done? So if there is a request for condemnation, at what point must the committee consider that condemnation? After the fact or before the fact of the condemnation being requested? And then I think Honorable Steenhuisen and my other colleagues touched on the other responsibilities which we need to consider as a committee moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, it's Waters, not Walters, eh? Not Munsey. Okay, that's fine, don't worry. Chair, just on the point that was raised by Honourable Steenhuisen and Singh about the disjuncture between members' needs and facilities and this committee, because we deal here with the financial well-being of Parliament and how money is spent. And there's no particular body now that deals with members' interests or members' needs, and that needs to be looked at. And I know on page slide 5, Parliament may by resolution of the Assembly and Council assign any other functions to us. We need to discuss whether or not we want to take that responsibility or whether we need to look at establishing another body somehow, because the quarterly consultative forum played that vital role in which members' needs within communicated to Parliament. And so we need to look at that. Then just as far as the monthly reports are concerned, I mean, we take it we will be getting them on a monthly basis. The fact is we need to interrogate them as a committee. And I do see in the program that we are going to be meeting, well, in October weekly, and in the new year, according to the program, on a monthly basis. And I take it that every month those reports will be on the agenda for us to interrogate, as a matter of course. So you know, we go through them as a committee on a monthly basis. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we just on the last one, reserve that for our own discussions, because that's really not the matter of the... Yeah, we will discuss that one ourselves after we've clarified our roles and functions. And then on your second or your first point that you raised that ties in with Mr. Steenhuisen's point. I mean, historically we normally inherit a legacy report. And I would imagine that legacy report, if it does exist, Mr. Steenhuisen, will raise all those issues that you're talking about. So maybe we should request that legacy report. And matters that fall within this committee's jurisdiction, we deal with from the legacy report. Those that don't fall within this jurisdiction, we then make recommendations where they should fall into. I think that's the way we should go, Mr. Steenhuisen. Then we're all happy, because you've had sight of it, some of us have not had sight of that report. So if that is okay, then we can do that. We ask for that legacy report, or if there isn't, that they develop a legacy report with all outstanding matters for our consideration. And then on other matters related to that, I think, Honorable, we maybe will have to, in requesting that, require some sort of insight from the speakers forum, or not speakers forum, from the executive authority, how they intend to deal with matters that are of members' interests, that are not necessarily residing here. We can't deal with, for instance, with what time the bus leaves Acacia Park. It's not our responsibility here. So we should ask and say to them, please clarify those things for us. And that we leave then to the accounting authority. And once they've responded to us, we can agree on a time frame when we want that. We then can look at it. But I'm just cautioning that we must be clear what is our role and what, if there's a need for another forum to replace the quarterly forum or the members' interest, then they must do that. I just don't want us to cloud our business with that. Mr. Singh, are you happy with that approach?
Yeah, I just wanted to back you up on that. If you look at slide 15, guiding principles, the first one says, no member may attend a deliberation on a matter in which the member has a material interest. Now, I have an interest in the tools of trade, in the kind of cell phone, the laptop, all the other facilities. So where do we talk about all that? So there's a bit of a contradiction here. Thank you.
That having been cleared from our side, let's hand over to yourselves, gentlemen. And you know, it's Friday. We really want to get out of here as soon as possible. We're handing it over to the team. I'm hoping that you've noted. If you haven't, we have. And we'll remind you. If you could respond to members, then we'll take a second round or follow-ups if you're not happy with the responses, members.
Thank you, Chair. I will start, and I have my colleagues here. After my response, I will allow Advocate Jenkins to also add on what I might have omitted, and then colleagues will also follow here. Let me start with the first question about where the member asked summoning anyone. Now, just to clarify this point, it's first, we are saying the executive authority, and I think one member also touched on that one, to say the committee can invite, but now when you summon, it's when a person has not complied with your invitation. I think you don't start by summoning. You invite a person, but if a person does not comply, then you summon. That is where the issue of summoning comes in. But if you invite and a person comes, then there is no need to summon. But where a person does not want to cooperate, then you summon. I hope it's clear. But now, let's say anyone. If there is a service provider who the committee feels has not, or has, there are questions about the service rendered, and the person has received money from Parliament, the committee can ask questions. Or somebody is receiving, or an institution is receiving money from Parliament, and Parliament wants to know how the money given is being utilized. Then such an institution can be required to explain. If there is no cooperation, then the summoning part will come into the question. The second question was the issue of unauthorized expenditure, how should it be recovered? In my understanding, I believe the normal process will follow, wherein if somebody owes you as a person or as an institution, first there must be an invoice, or that person must be made aware you owe so much, pay. If there is no payment, then there is a letter of demand. If there is no compliance, then there is a legal process. But my colleagues here, including Advocate Jenkins, can also add on that. The question of other issues pending, I think it has been responded by the chair to say, wherein there is the issue of a legacy report, the committee will look into the legacy report and consider what might be relevant to it. Quarterly consultative forum and the committee, I am not aware of the mandate of the quarterly consultative forum, honorable members, but I believe whatever that committee or that forum was doing, if the functions falls under the functions of the committee, obviously the committee will take over. But the committee cannot take over the functions of that forum just because the forum is no longer there. I think co-chairs, what the committee need to be aware of it, if there are other issues that need to be attended to, they must go to relevant forums. So the committee must only focus on what is mandated to do, or what the two houses by resolution passed to the committee. Executive authority personally responsible for unauthorized expenditure, what about the accounting officer? If the accounting officer commit unauthorized expenditure without following the correct procedure, the accounting officer will also be responsible. Here, I think the statement was made with regard to the executive authority with financial implications. Now, in this case, it is not the accounting officer who initiated that. And we indicated earlier on to say, whenever the accounting officer receives instruction, the accounting officer must advise the executive authority about the implications thereof. And then if the executive authority in writing say accounting officer continue, it means now the executive authority takes responsibility. That is in that context. But that does not mean if the accounting officer, for whatever reason, commit an authorized expenditure without any instruction, then the accounting officer will not be personally responsible. Which date is correct? Honorable members, the date on the minutes should be the correct one. I might have missed the date in my presentation, so the date on the minutes is the correct one. Playing the role of scoper, not to say this committee is a scoper. It's just to give an idea of what scoper is doing, and maybe the committee can function like that, but not to say it's a scoper or taking the functions of a scoper. That is in that context, honorable member. The executive authority, I think the act is clear that the executive authority can also appear before the committee if the committee so require. Strategic plans, yes, honorable members, the committee needs to look into the strategic plans and check whether they are in line with the act, and on annual basis the strategic plans are being reviewed, so that there is an annual plan for the following year. In that context, the committee will consider the strategic plans, even though they have been adopted for the next 5 years. At what stage must the committee consider any deviations? The Act says if there is an instruction, it must be promptly referred to the committee. My understanding is even before the funds are committed, that must happen. That is my understanding. My colleagues may help me as to whether that promptly means a long time, that by the time it comes, the funds shall have been committed. The disjuncture, I think the co-chair has responded to that one, where a member has interest. Honorable Singh, the interest here is personal interest. Let me say business interest, where a member is going to gain personally. But the issue of cell phone, tools of trade, I think it's not that personal in my understanding, because it is just to help the member fulfill his or her function as a member of parliament. It's not that personal. In that way, then the member, I think, can participate. But if it's something outside the function of the member as a member of parliament is of a personal interest, then that is where the issue. It's a guiding principle. When we put this, we would just say to, let's put this as a guiding principle so that members understand, and it is good governance. I think I stop here and hand over to my colleagues, starting with Advocate Jenkins, and then the colleagues will follow.
Thank you very much. Good morning, co-chairpersons, members, colleagues, acting deputy secretary. Apologies for being a little late. Please, no disrespect, please, chairpersons. I just had to take care of something quickly. I think if I may start just by putting it in context, this committee is a governance structure. So it replaces the previous governance structures that were here before the Act came into operation. For instance, the quarterly consultative forum, POA. So in that regard, I'm trying still to get my head around exactly how it fits in if we look at what is written in the King Code, and we're moving towards King 4 now. So you have the House, which is basically representing the shareholders, the executive authority, which acts like a board, holding the accounting officer, which is the management, to account. And then to assist the executive authority, they have an audit committee that's appointed by them. And then this committee plays a role, probably what one sees similarly in corporations these days. You get ethics committees that assist the boards with certain governance issues. But the Act is specific that when it comes to ethics, there's that Schedule 2, which deals with the ethics of the executive authority. That must be referred to the ethics Joint Ethics Committee. So it plays something to ensure good governance of Parliament and to play an oversight role, which is critical. So it makes recommendations. That's the first point I want to make, just to put it into context. So when we're dealing, say, with the issue of condemnation, if I can jump to that, slide 13. Remembering that this Act is also sort of based on the PFMA. Management must be allowed to do management. Executive authority must do the outcomes issues, the direction giving. So this committee assisting the House will not have to approve or recommend approval of those condemnations, or a condemnation for non-compliance, or a permission to deviate. The committee will have oversight over that. So it will come after the fact. And I don't want to contradict my colleague, but I think it's we're developing ideas around this. But the point is that one must allow the executive authority to do what they must do, the accounting officer must do what they must do, and the accountability will be here in this committee, and there will be recommendation to the House to say that was wrong, and what are we going to do about that? And usually, there's a two-step process. Either you prevent it from happening again, and if there was a misgiving, how do you correct it, and how do you prevent from moving forward? And I think the similar issue applies, but in a more, I would say, more critical way with unauthorized expenditure. The slides refer to unauthorized expenditure. I think the good place to start there is Section 20 of the Act, which deals with unauthorized expenditure in general. And we must keep in mind the separation of powers issue, because what Parliament is now getting from National Treasury is an allocation, a lump sum. It doesn't get it allocated into programs anymore. So we get a lump sum. The Act requires us then to put those within certain programs. So this committee needs to see a draft budget and to make a recommendation to the House on that draft budget. But the Houses must approve their own budget. Well, the Houses must approve one budget for Parliament. That's how it will work.
Now, if one looks at Section 20 and you go to issues of unauthorized expenditure, it says that clearly unauthorized expenditure will not become a charge against the National Revenue Fund unless Parliament approves it. And therefore, actually, much like SCOPA does with unauthorized expenditure, say to National Treasury, we've approved that unauthorized expenditure. Please include it either in your adjustments budget or in the budget of the following year. If you do not approve it, it goes to the own funds, which are usually retained funds or donor funds. Now, when it comes to accountability for those, I think my colleague has summarized it correctly. If you do not follow the Act, there's a personal liability that attaches to it. How to get that back? That is the new flavor. It's not just pay back the money. Now, how did you pay back that money in the end? How did you pay back that money? We have in the Act requirements to have a debtor management policy. The way I understand how we'll get that back is whether it's the accounting officer or whether it's Frank Jenkins from Legal Services who made some kind of authorization for expenditure, or the acting deputy secretary or whoever, you will fall in the category of debtor, and there's a policy how to get that back. Now, it sounds almost overly bureaucratic, but one must remember we are dealing here with a creature of statute. This committee is a creature of statute. So the principle of legality applies, and that means contrary to private sector. Private sector can do what they're allowed to do unless law prevents it from doing. Government or public sector can only do what's allowed in terms of legislation. So unless there's an amendment or there's new rules that give the power to this committee can only do what it can do in terms of the law. And the same with the accounting officer and the same with the executive authority. So when it is about getting money back, the accounting officer is responsible to claim any debts. If that's a debt against him or herself, we must go to the policy. The policy must set out how we're going to recover debts and when can you write off debts. Those policies must be approved by the executive authority eventually and given to the House to approve. So it's a proper regulation making process. Not many people have picked it up, but it's quite fundamental and it's groundbreaking. It's the first time I'm aware of in government that the regulations for your financial management that you make is made in a similar way than regulations. Even the PFMA allows accounting officers to make policies. It doesn't have to come through Parliament and be approved by Parliament, but Parliament's own ones will be approved by Parliament itself. Chair, I would like to say something about the power to summons. The Act makes it very clear that the Executive Authority can participate in this committee, and the committee has the power to summons the accounting officer or any official. That's what the Act says. The Constitution goes wider. Constitution in Section 56 and the provision that applies, I think it's 69 to the NCOP, says you can summon anybody. So it's from that constitutional power that this committee can summon anybody, including the executive authority. But when one looks specifically at the Act, it's narrower. So I think within that context, one must understand its power to call anybody, as well as to have oversight over the financial management of Parliament. I might just add, Chair, that the monthly statements, I think they were tabled last week, if I'm not mistaken. Not yet referred to the committee. Yes, yes. No, thank you very much, Chair. Thank you. I appreciate that, Chair. I appreciate that. The legacy issues are the legacy issues. I think that enough has been said about that. Chair, I think I've discussed most of the issues that people have referred me to. Slide 5, I might just look at what... Yes, Chair, if there's something I left out, I will take it. Thank you.
Before I open up for second round for members, anybody else, are you comfortable with your responses? You want to respond? Yes, sir.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tepo Masweu. Just one question that Mr. Singh asked that on the strategic plan. Strat plans normally are tabled at the beginning of Parliament's term. That would be for 5 years. And ideally, one would not want to change or adjust strategic plans. But because of we've had conditions that have had an impact on a lot of our targets, in particular the NDP, it would be, I would submit that it would be in the committee's interest to consider what has been the implications of the targets that was set at the beginning of Parliament's term in terms of the current strat plan. So it would be possible to reconsider if the targets are still achievable, if the targets are still relevant and attainable. So it's up for consideration. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We'll take a second round of hands if they are, and then hopefully we will wrap up this matter and go to the next one. Let me take Mr. De Beer and then Mr. Steenhuisen. Any other hands before you start, Mr. De Beer? Any other hands? Going once, go. No, no. I want original ideas. I don't want depending ideas, honestly, because... It's fine. Then you can put your hand up and say you're covered. You can say you're covered. Mr. De Beer, Mr. Steenhuisen, Mr. Waters, and then Mr. Singh. And we will wrap it up at that point.
Thank you, Chairperson. Section 54 of the Act, Parliament Act, tells us the submission of reports to the oversight mechanism. I think this is very clear. We must stick to what is in the Act. Second, Chairperson, and you've got a fantastic legacy coming from SCOPA. We apply the principles of SCOPA. That's what it is. And we go to the specific page 15 in the presentation, the professional ethics in financial management of Parliament must be applied. And somewhere along the line, there was a conference a few weeks ago in Sandton regarding ethics. We can go and read what happened or what presentations was submitted at that conference regarding ethics and ethics in financial management. Looking also at other countries, how they are dealing with the similar type of comet in Canada. We learned a lot from Canada in 94. Germany, definitely, yes, my province. Northern Cape, Sweden, as well as India and Mexico. That's where we derive from. If we go back to 94 and the year before that.
Thank you, Chair. And I'm sorry to hop on about this monthly reporting, but there is a principle we must establish up front. Because Advocate Jenkins is absolutely right. They did table them in Parliament. The problem is they tabled them a year late and backdated till March last year. Now, the reason the Act requires us to be provided with the monthly, quarterly, and mid-year reports in terms of Section 54 is that we can be on an ongoing basis monitoring what's happening. So we don't end up at the end of the year with a crisis which we can do very little about. The monthly statements are provided to this committee so that we can be up to date with any potential problems and intervene if necessary or pass resolutions to ensure that there's some intervention. So it really doesn't help us to wait a full year to get the monthly financial statements of Parliament, because you might as well just provide us with the annual statements. So it's important that we establish upfront as a principle that Section 54 is applied and complied with by Parliament from now on in, and that we are given those monthly reports so we can do our job in terms of this piece of legislation.
Chair, good job, I put my hand up. The question wasn't raised. We seem to have two different opinions with regards to condemnation or approval of departure of expenditure. We have one view that says that we have to be informed beforehand and we have to give approval for that. That was the one view that was given. The other view is that we don't have to give peer approval, we can do it after the fact. And I think we need to decide on the principle as well, since we're a new body going forward, what we want. And I would strongly urge that we give approval before the fact. And given that we're going to be meeting more regularly than the PRA met, from the program that you, the draft program, at least on a monthly basis, I don't see any reason why we should not be given the information beforehand, and we then approve the departure from the budget. That would be my suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Every chapter in this Act relates to financial management. So I think it's important that the co-chairs consult with the speaker, the executive authorities, about the QCF responsibilities, because I see a difference here in, you know, where QCF functions will reside, whether it resides with us or with somebody else. So I think it's important, because this is all about financial management. And secondly, I think the issue about the provincial legislatures, my view is that after having read that press statement that was issued, that everything in this act applies to national parliament, but provincial legislatures should use this as a point of departure to establish their own acts in their own legislatures, and these will be the norms and standards. So nothing here doesn't apply to national parliament. So it says monthly reports, it's national parliament. Everything is national parliament, except that these norms and standards need to be applied at provinces as well. That's my understanding, and maybe I'm wrong.
Let us respond and save you, Nana. Let us respond to these three questions and members, because can add to it. Let's take the last one. We said just now that we're going to ask the speaker or the powers that be to give us a legacy report. And matters that are not for this committee must go to another committee. So that QCF issue, we're saying, must be resolved at that level. It can't be resolved at our level. So I'm hoping that that's done. There's no QCF matters that deal with salary adjustments, or deal with cell phones, or deal with buses that will come here. Let's just clarify that. And parking. Let's clarify that. So regardless what our colleagues said here, they're not going to come here. And whether it's called the QCF or called whatever else, that is for that body. It's not our one. So I'm hoping there's clarity on that one. The second one I want to deal with is the monthly reports. Indeed, I agree that monthly reports must be given in time so that we can look at them. What I did say earlier on is that when we get to the work method, we will then upfront clarify how we process those monthly reports. But the principle that members must be afforded the monthly reports is not negotiable. That is not negotiable. What we will discuss is how we process them. So I'm hoping, Steenhuisen, that is dealt with. The last issue around condonation. My understanding, Honourable Member, is that the accounting officer and the executive authority must be allowed to run the day-to-day business of Parliament. They must manage. That's what the PFMA was about. It's them that must do the management. So, if there's an instruction from the executive authority or from the accounting officer, from whichever side, that falls foul of the Act and would land up in unauthorized, fruitless, wasteful, or whatever the case might be, that's their business in terms of they are stepping outside of the Act. Ours would be that when that has been confirmed independently by the Auditor General or whoever, that we then say that indeed Mr. AG is saying that the accounting authority or the executive officer overstepped the mark by using monies that they don't have, that we then pronounce upon it. Which is different to what Mr. Walters is saying, where he's saying that we should be the ones that say, don't go ahead and do it. Mr. Walters. So I'm saying those are the two things that I'm trying to clarify. And we must decide how we deal with it. I'm saying my position, allow managers to manage. We will deal with it when we get the independent report and not play referee and player. That's my understanding of how we should deal with it. So I'm hoping that would clarify that. And if that clarifies those three issues that were raised, we want to thank you. But let me get an indication from members if we are happy broadly with how we've tried to wrap it up. We are. Mr. Waters?
Agreed. Let managers manage. But just on slide 13, and you said we must wait till the AG's report before we hold the executive authority to account, if needs be. Yeah, but if you look at slide 13, it says here, approval of departure or condemnation of non-compliance must be recorded in writing and referred to us promptly. So that gives me the indication it's before the AG's report, because the AG's report comes a year or so later. So while I hear what you're saying, can I just get clarity on this? Would we not receive a condemnation pre the AG's report then?
Right. I don't want to get into dialogue. I'll ask my colleague later on. My understanding is, or my recommendation would be, let them give it to us so that we have an opportunity, Honorable Masondo, to go and pre-warn them that we are aware that if you do X, Y, and Z, you will be breaking the rule, as opposed to saying, don't do it. That's how I would understand it, that they bring it to our attention as the shareholder or the overseer in this case. There's nothing stops us that says, Speaker, if you continue doing X, Y, and Z, you'll in fact be falling foul. And when they come back and account, they can't then say they were not pre-warned. That's how I would understand it. Matara?
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I think the wording is fairly clear. It says approval of departure or condemnation of non-compliance must be recorded in writing. So if there's either the departure or condemnation of non-compliance, the executive authority together with the accounting officer must record it in writing and then refer it to the committee. So it's not, it must happen first before it gets referred. It can't come to us before, almost as if you're preempting something that may not have happened or may not take place.
Ival, I am really closing this matter. I think there's broad consensus, honorable members, on, and of course it's never going to be cast in stone. As we go along, we will refine all these type of things. But I think there's broad consensus on the mandate, powers, and functions of this committee. I think there's broad consensus, and we'll continue to refine it. Is that an accurate assessment, that we are happy with what has happened? I love this committee. And let's then move on, if we may, with the next item on the agenda, which was the proposed method of work. And I think this is where we now, as members of the committee, can sharpen each other. I'm not sure, Co-Chair, if you want to do the broad overview of our thinking. And let us say from up front, we tried to stick to whatever the legislative requirements were in terms of deadlines, and we added our own thing. But it's really a proposal that we're putting, and members can then decide whether it is sensible or it needs changes. I'm not sure, Coach, if you want to.
He did.
Where's the proposal? Mr. Waters, you indicated earlier on that there is some document that showed our meetings. If you could refer us to that one so that I talk to that document. I have another document that I had prepared. I'm not sure which document you were talking about when you said there's an indication that we'll meet monthly. I'm not sure if you were... Yes? If you could just refer me to that one, sir? Right after the presentation. Program. Is this one here? All right. Okay, thank you. I've got the document. It's a document headed Draft Program of the Joint Committee, 12th of October to the 11th of May. That's the one we're talking about. Yes, sir. All right. We obviously dealt with the first agenda item, and that was agreed upon. That is what we're doing today. We then are proposing that we look at the financial statements of Parliament, because they have been submitted, and the previous 15-16. Those have been presented, and I would hope, I mean, I would imagine managers, members have them. If not, would the table please make sure they look at them. So that's what we will do on the 12th. We will go through that report, interrogate it, and make recommendations or findings on that report. On the 19th, we propose that we look at the quarterly report. Let me, and I'm saying this is what we would have to debate and discuss. What we were proposing, honorable members, was that we're going to get the monthly reports on time, all the monthly reports on time, every member. But we are proposing to the House that we, on a quarterly basis, would then get together as this body and interrogate those three reports. Now, by the time we meet, it will coincide with the quarter. So whether you call it three monthly reports that we will do simultaneously or a quarterly report, really we will be talking to the same thing. And that is what we were proposing we would do on the 19th, which will tie with the first quarter for 15-16. And then, of course, Parliament's budget for next year will be put on the table for us to look at, interrogate, and to comment on. And then we'll conclude that business on the 21st of October, which is the annual report and the budget, and write our report. Beyond that, members, we were then suggesting to you that we meet only on a quarterly, well, not only, we meet at a minimum on a quarterly basis, that we'll look at months 1, 2, and 3 for that quarter, next month 1, 2, or 3 for that quarter, but up front indicate if in the event of the monthly reports that we've looked at, there's a matter that we think needs our attention, that we can consider it, but not set monthly meetings for the sake of setting monthly meetings unless there is a need to discuss them. That was our thinking at the time, and this is what we are suggesting to you. So I want to just wrap it up by saying, at a minimum, we'll meet quarterly, but we'll consider all the reports. However, if in the process there is something that can't wait for the end of that quarter, we should be flexible enough to say there's a matter that has appeared, or there's a matter that a member requests us to look at, and we find the space and the time to look at it. That was the methodology that we thought would be best suited for our role as oversight. And we're putting it to you for consideration, and if indeed it is considered, that's how we will go and do our business. So I thought, let me just briefly summarize it in that fashion. Chair, you are co-accused number 2 because you planned this thing with me. So both of us will respond to questions if there are any questions that members would have. Otherwise, endorsement will be more than welcome. Honorable Singh. Honorable Steenhuisen. Will follow suit.
Yeah, Chairperson, my view is that, you know, we should adopt this as a point of departure. And I think the first week of the 12th, 19th, and 21st, in October, those 3 days, will dictate to us how we want to proceed thereon. But as a point of departure, I think it makes sense that we do not meet every month to discuss a monthly report, unless there are issues that we pick up that warrant the need for us to meet. Because in all other departments as well, you look at the quarterly performance, the midterm performance, third quarter, and then, you know, the final budget. And I don't think this should be any different with the caveats that you put in, that yes, if we need to, then we should.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. One of the problems with the POA is that we don't meet often enough, and you know, invariably what would happen is that people would come to those meetings not prepared, and they would say, well, they'll report back at the next meeting, and then you'd wait 6 months we had them. So I'm reassured that you will make sure that we are meeting to meet the program. Ideally, I think we should try and meet every second month, but let's see how it goes, and you know, according to your plan. But I would then make a request that officials come to these meetings prepared to answer, not to come here and say, oh, well, I'll have to go back and come back and furnish you with another report at the next meeting. That officials come here well-briefed, well-prepared, with the documentation. If they've got presentations, they submit it to us timeously so that we can go through them and prepare for those meetings. It would then make meeting every month unnecessary if we have productive meetings that people have come prepared for. So I think that would be the request, and I'm happy to go with your proposal and see how it goes. But people must come here prepared.
Any other views? Agreement? We've agreed. Thank you so much. Let's just indicate to members. Let me emphasize what Honorable Steenhuisen said. That you're going to have to come prepared, whoever it is that summons. And part of the practice there where I've operated is you can't bring a presentation the night before. So I'm talking to the office, to the table staff. We would want a presentation of whatever is going to come to us a week before the time so that we could prepare thoroughly as members of parliament. So I'm talking here to the office of the speaker, to the office of the secretary, that it won't be acceptable to bring a report to us on the eve or on the morning of the meeting. So I'm emphasizing Honorable Steenhuisen's point that please be prepared, but we also want to be equally prepared. And therefore, the draft report as presented is being put before you and has been adopted as the method of work for this committee. Is that correct? The last matter on the agenda before my chair closes it is going to be a matter that was suggested or requested by Honorable Steenhuisen, and nobody objected to it. Documents that we might require for further meetings. Honorable Steenhuisen.
Thanks very much, Chair. This relates to the meeting that's going to take place on Wednesday the 12th, and the Auditor General is going to be here. So the documentation I think would be necessary would be a full report on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as any correspondence that has occurred between the Auditor General's office and the Secretary of Parliament's office relating to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I have some concerns about the accuracy of some figures in here, and I think it would be important that at the next meeting officials come prepared with the full listing of fruitless wasteful expenditure, as well as that correspondence that has occurred between the offices then. And then just in terms of the use of consultants, and specifically as it relates to the annual report, a report on the outsourced human resource strategy, the outsourced labor recruitment strategy, and the outsourced public communication strategy, around a cost-benefit analysis on those particular outsourcings that have taken place. And then, of course, we're going to have some report how we balance the award in the CCMA to the parliamentary staff that have had that award given to them backdated. There's going to have to be some indication of how we're going to fund that in the country. So if I could request those documents initially.
Over to my colleague. Could you just give us that in writing again so that we make sure that they capture, it doesn't have to be now, but you can share it between Cindy and whoever. All right. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. Just on that matter, I think Honorable Smith will know. I see on the 12th we're going to get a briefing by the AG on the AG's report. We're going to get an analysis by the researchers, right, on the annual report. I don't see an opportunity here for us to interrogate the Secretariat on the AG's findings. Which item would that be? Because that's what normally happens in SCOPA. You get the AG coming and telling you about what the findings were. That's in private. It's a private, a closed meeting. Then, arising from that, then you interrogate the department, the accounting officer. Now we need that opportunity to call in the Secretariat and question them on the findings. I don't know where that is on this agenda. Thanks.
No, thanks, Mr. Singh. I think all what we're saying is that we need to structure our program in such a manner that we will be able to have a direct interaction with the Secretariat of Parliament, Secretary of Parliament. I think point noted. Advocate.
Chair, good morning, Honourable Members. I just want to find out whether that would be the full consideration of the annual report, or is it only matters that have been isolated by Honourable Steenhuisen?
Let's talk about what we envisage on the 12th, Honourable Members, and it will answer your question, Mr. Singh. If you look at it, from 9 to 11 o'clock, we are seeing the AG. Only us, in other words, committee, in preparation for the AG. That's where we'll sharpen our own questions for the AG. But at 2 to 4, that's when the accounting officer will come and respond. So we will indeed have the accounting officer. And, sir, we are considering the annual report from page 1 to page 100 of the annual report. So it's not only what Mr. Steenhuisen is saying, he's pre-warning you of the kind of areas that he might want to interrogate, but other members might have other areas that they would want to interrogate. So to answer your question, we are considering this document in its totality. And the Auditor General's is only part of that report. So we're clear on how we're going to run the 12th one.
Yes, Honourable Lotas.
Chair, thank you. I may have missed something, but when I served on portfolio committees and the AG came before us, they were never closed. And I would like to get some understanding as to why we're having a closed meeting with the AG. Why isn't it open? Thank you.
Mr. Singh, no. Look, the AG is going to be in the meeting at 2 o'clock. What we're really trying to do, and if you want to have it opened, not fussy, it's really to sharpen members of parliament. Now, if we sharpen members of parliament and those that are going to account are going to be listening to it, I have no problem. But really, the practice that we have undertaken for the past 21 years, Honourable Singh, you'll know, is that we sit, it's not even a meeting. It's really just a planning and clarity from our side, because members of parliament are not necessarily all au fait with the financials. So it gives us an opportunity to say, what did you mean, AG? And AG would be able to say, these are the kinds of questions you should ask. So that was the intention. It was an opportunity to allow us to talk to the AG in the absence of the committee. But whether it's opened or closed, we can discuss it.
So I'll take it, Chair, then. Sorry, Chair. It's just us and the AG. There's no other officials from Parliament in the meeting. All
right? Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it. Thanks. There is no any other matter. We have processed all matters on the agenda. Honourable members, Co-Chair, is there any other outstanding issue? Yeah, I think we need to appreciate that we dealt with key areas today regarding our mandate, powers and functions, and also related to method of work and how we really want to function. So it should be very good work in progress to start with, so that we will be preparing ourselves for these upcoming meetings. I think issues raised were very valuable in terms of how we should really ensure that we are effective as a committee and ensure that we promote and maintain high standard of professional ethics in the financial management within Parliament. So we believe that all of us will discharge our responsibilities as members of these committees to ensure that Parliament attain its broader strategic vision and will serve as a resource and ensure that accountability is exercised effectively, economically, and ensure that efficiently. So thanks, Co-Chair, for facilitating the session. And thanks very much, Honorable Members. Let's adjourn our meeting.